Welcome to Red Sox Digest, the only show where pain, sarcasm, and a dash of hope collide nightly like a Trevor Story strikeout. We cover every loss, every meltdown, and yes, even the rare win with brutally honest takes and zero front office fluff. Subscribe today at RedSoxDigest.com or risk being left out in the cold like a home game in April. And now, here's the crew at Red Sox Digest.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Red Sox Digest. I am your host, Jim Delfino. I'm joined today by Nick Face. Nick, how you doing today?
Hey, Jim. I'm doing good. You enjoying the heat today?
Yeah, we hit about 90 here in Connecticut. How about up in your area?
Yeah, in the Boston area, we were in the 90s too. It definitely is the feels of summer now. And it didn't rain, so you know what? We'll take it.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a pretty hot one all week. But you know what? It's every day I keep saying to myself, I don't have to shovel. So
that's a good thing. Yep. Especially in New England.
You got it. So we just finished our series against the Seattle Mariners. And as you and I predicted, we would take 2 out of 3 in that series. We also predicted correctly the debacle that was Walker Buehler. So there's no surprise there. What are your takeaways from the series or even just the last game in general?
Let's go positive first. The positive is that Crochet was filth again. It's nice to be able to have a pitcher that you can look forward to going out on the mound, putting in his work, getting the job done, and making it nice. The best thing on it was kept the Red Sox obviously in the game, and they were able to get the win. The problem with this is the fact that the bats didn't do anything again. And that's the thing that we have to make sure is fixed, because you can't keep winning games 2-1, 2-0, 3-1, 3-2. You have to hit the ball. You just do.
Yeah, and that leads us into, you know, we got some good offense out of Marcelo Meyer, who had a home run in game 3, and Trevor Story with the 2-run home run as well. Story has been pleasantly consistent. He had a little bit of a stretch there, but he's been consistent of late. Do you think this is just a mirage, or do you think we can count on him?
No, I don't think we can count on him. I think that what we're seeing right now is the ups and downs of Trevor Story. He could go on a 2-week binge like he's doing right now, hitting the ball and getting some production. We could go right back again and another month spin of him not doing anything for production and us saying to ourselves, we really signed this guy to be our shortstop. And that's kind of the state of what Trevor Story is. Back when this move was going down, back in 2022, I never loved it. I never wanted it. They just did it because they needed insurance, because they knew they were going to not have Xander Bogaerts the next year. And now they're stuck. Now they're stuck with Trevor Story trying to figure out what to do. I would love to see Trevor Story be moved to second base in the not-so-distant future, because I do want Marcelo Meyer to be the guy at shortstop. He is your future. He is your guy. That is the one that should be playing shortstop. I think that this move is it could be the catalyst of something else that happened earlier today that we'll get into. And there'll be some discussion about what they want to do with second base moving forward. But you are stuck with Trevor Story. And you need more games that Trevor Story did from last night to continue to warrant playing him in the lineup.
Yeah, I totally agree with you 100%. I'm not really sold that Trevor Story can keep this up. Obviously, you know, we all get older every year, and, you know, there's really there's nothing to really speak that he's overcome all his injuries, and now all of a sudden he's going to be an offensive threat when he really has not been an offensive threat outside of Coors Field. Even his optics and his numbers outside of Coors Field were never his strong suit. So he's always been a Coors Field guy. And, you know, I mean, at this point right now, we'll take the offense anywhere we can get it, because at this stage, with four rookies in the lineup, going to be down to three now. But bottom line is that, you know, we really don't have anybody in that lineup that we can depend on in the current state with Bregman still on the shelf. I want to just touch on game two for just a minute, because obviously that was the stinker. And Walker Buehler signed here for a one-year deal for $20 million. He said in the offseason that he wanted to finish his career as a Boston Red Sox. Obviously, never had been here before outside of just being a visitor or playing with the Dodgers. This guy now is 5-5 on the season with an ERA close to 6. If he was a rookie or a second-year player coming up through this organization, he would be either DFA'd, dropped, traded, brought back down to AAA, you name it. How can we fix Walker Buehler, or do we need to move on from him before the season gets away?
I think the problem here is the money that's attached to Walker Buehler. I think if the Red Sox wanted to do anything, say release him or whatnot, John Henry would have to eat that money. And we know, just with what happened on Sunday, about John Henry eating money, he's not going to do it. He's just not. So they're going to have to work through it. Now, the positive on this is that Walker Buehler has been around the league. He knows how to pitch. He knows the makeup. He's a World Series champion. He's got to get fixed. The question here is, will Andrew Bailey be able to work with him to get him back into Dodger-esque Walker Buehler? We said on the last show, one of the points that I brought up, the Dodgers decided they did not want to bring Walker Buehler back. There was a reason for that. Could it be damaged goods? Could it be that they just wanted a different change of scenery? I mean, the Dodgers are the premier team here in Major League Baseball. Why would you not want Walker Buehler back? Well, I think we might be seeing here why the Dodgers said, you know what? We're done. We're done. We're moving on. Let the Red Sox try and figure him out. My money is on the Dodgers tried. They tried to work through it. They tried to get Walker Buehler back on the right path. And lo and behold, they just said, you know what? Enough is enough. Yes, he did go and win the last game of the World Series against the Yankees and all that. We know that. But still, he was still banged up. He was still hurt. He was not the same guy when he came up, lightning in a bottle. This was going to be a special guy. They were calling him, oh, we could have the next pairing of Clayton Kershaw here for years to come with Walker Buehler. And it never panned out. So now the Red Sox are here, the dollar store generals, trying to take a bargain on the guy to see if they can get something out of him. And they're not getting really anything out of him. I think he's had, what, two or three good starts in his career here with the Red Sox? That's about it. And to tell you the truth, I can't even remember them because they really weren't that great.
No, they weren't. And the other part about this is that, you know, you need pitching. So it's a very difficult thing to even consider moving him when, you know, starting pitching is always going to be a premium. It's a premium on this team because, let's face it, going into spring training and into the regular season, I think a lot of people were thinking Tanner Houck was going to take the next step in his development. And you have to realize this guy is close to 30 already. I think he is what he is, but we don't even know what he really is. You know, is he the dominant starter that was the first half of 2024? Or is he the guy that everybody's figured out in the first half of 2025? I don't know which way they go with him moving forward, but I can tell you this. As the calendar continues to move towards July, if they can't figure him out, they might be better off just putting him on the shelf indefinitely just so that he doesn't tarnish and ruin what could be a potential playoff season for us. I mean, lo and behold, Nick, I don't know if you looked at the standings right now. We actually have a playoff spot. We are the third wild card. As ridiculous as this team has been all season, the errors, the botched plays, the outfield ground balls that go through legs. I don't care what it is. This team has lost three out of seven to the White Sox, swept by Detroit. They've been absolutely murdered by bad competition, and somehow, some way, they are actually in a third wild card spot. It boggles my mind that we can even discuss that.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, and I was looking at the standings and everything too today, and I actually chuckled. I said, "You got to be kidding me! We actually have the last slot in the wild card right now, considering how bad it's been. It's still been bad. I still don't feel like this is sustainable. I just don't. There's still too many holes on this team. We saw a nice week and a half with what the pitching has done. Walker Buehler blew up right in your face, so you saw that. I guess you could say there was a little bit of potential goods on the way that have been hurt that could be returning soon. I know, you know, of course, Bregman. I mean, that's going to be a big move when that comes back. You definitely have missed him. But Yoshida's name's coming into the fold. What is Yoshida going to do?
Round out the second.
He's a contact hitter, at least. So, I mean, I hope he doesn't strike out like Jaron Duran and all the rest of the crew, because I'm sick of it. They need to put the bat on the ball. You do have Tanner Houck, who threw his one inning of Worcester ball last night. I was not impressed, and he only threw one inning. Let's take that for what it is. You do have Cutter Crawford. Okay, he is – actually, I got to tell you, I'm a little surprised that it's been this long waiting for Cutter Crawford. I really have. I didn't think that this injury was that bad when spring training hit. And here we are, almost toward the midpoint here in the season, and no Cutter to be found. So you definitely could use him. Jordan Hicks, who they just acquired from the Giants, our Lord and Savior of the bullpen, he's another name. And then Justin Slayton. I'm questioning when he's going to be back, because right now, all I can think of with Justin Slayton is injury prone. I feel like he's injured more than he throws. I don't care how much talent the guy has. I don't care how many people say he's the closer of the future. I don't give a crap on any of that. I look at what's happening right now. And Justin Slayton is a Tristan Casas to me right now. Injured more than he produces. So get back on the field and get healthy. And then I'll be a critic again of them.
Well, Nick, you know that you brought up a good point, and I've said this before on some spaces and on Twitter and so forth. There is a distinct reason why a team lets a particular player left off and become a Rule 5 guy. Justin Slayton is a Rule 5 guy. If he is so good, and I'm not saying he's been terrible, but if he's so good, why would a team not protect him? Why would a team not protect Garrett Whitlock? When he's good, he's good. But you never know when he's going to be injured. And, you know, they talked about the fact that there are very few guys in Major League Baseball that become above average to superstar being a Rule 5 guy. And my answer to that is because most of those guys don't slip through the cracks. They're protected by their organization, or they're traded, or whatever the case might be. So, look, I'm willing to see it through with Slayton. I've seen some outings that he was totally nasty, and there's been outings where he's been totally flat. The injury concerns me. You know, I don't know where this is going to go from here, but you know, they are very fortunate that Aroldis Chapman has looked like an all-star this season, because I was looking at his numbers today, Nick, and it's amazing. If I have this right, he has one of the lowest whips of his career. He has one of the lowest ERAs in his career. He has one of the highest ERA pluses of his career at over 286. I mean, the guy has been lights out, and I don't know what he's doing, but whatever he's doing is working. And I see no reason why he can't continue, except for the fact of being overworked. And in this bullpen, if the results are not there, That's what concerns me for a guy like Chapman, is being overworked and fizzling out at the end when we need him the most.
I love the Chapman move when it was here. I've always been a fan. Granted, he's had issues off the field. That's a whole separate situation here. I look for guys that can produce, okay? Bottom line, you know, you have guys that are, you know, your Trevor Bowers and other ones that are a bunch of head cases. I believe in that whole thing, innocent until proven guilty. I just do. It's just how I've always been wired and how I look at things. I look at results. I see how the guy is a competitor. How are they going to produce on the field? What is it going to do for my baseball team? I give the Red Sox actually some credit here for that Chapman move, because it's something that they so desperately needed. I didn't want any more of the Kenley Jansen story. I was so sick and fed up with that. We went through the Craig Kimbrel years from 2018 to what, 2019 or whatever it was, or 2017 when he came. You know, he did his job, but it was still a heart attack. What this is reminding me of here with Chapman is a lot of the Koji Uehara years, where you can put a guy in at the end of the game and you don't have to stress and bite your nails and worry about what the hell is going to happen. That's what it feels like right here with having a guy that you can trust and count on. So I think a lot of it has to do on Chapman is that he physically is in incredible shape. Look at him. Like, the guy's a stud. He's athletic. He moves. He takes care of himself. And I think that's a lot to do with the reason why you're getting results here. The guy's always been a workhorse. And I want more of that style player on my ball club. I just do. I would love to see them even work out some sort of an extension right now, to tell you the truth. That's how high I've been on Chapman, because the guy has been an anchor in that bullpen who so desperately needed it. On the bullpen front, too, let's talk about Greg Weissert as well, because Weissert has also slid in and really made us not have to worry about not having Justin Slayton for a while. I think he's on 36, 37 appearances right now, and he has been a stud as well, too. We can talk about that because he's been a guy that has been getting more and more opportunities. Might not be the sexiest thing on the face of the earth with the trust and doing it the job all the time, but he's getting the opportunity and he's getting it done. And right now, he has to be one of those guys in your circle of trust in that Red Sox bullpen.
Yeah, no, he's definitely been getting more what I would consider important innings, not mop-up innings. Just looking at his numbers, I brought him up here. So he has 34 innings pitched, 27 hits, 10 earned runs. The three home runs is a concern, but 32 strikeouts in 34 innings. So just about a K per inning. So he's keeping at least one of the three guys he's facing off the bases, which is extremely important. And his whip is pretty good. I think his whip away from Fenway Park is under one. So these are all numbers that you like. His whip total is 1.12, which is satisfactory for most major league quality relievers and great for starters. So yep. I've been really pleased with him. That might be one of those guys that, you know, we just kind of lucked out with, being an ex-Yankee and being able to take a flyer on him.
Three ex-Yankees that we're really happy about.
Yeah, making our team.
Whitlock, Narvaez, and Weissert have been massive reasons for 2025s.
And, of course, Chapman being an ex-Yankee, too.
I forgot about that. You're right, 100%. Yep that's 100% true.
Switching gears for a minute, the Boston Red Sox have taken the position to demote second base, center fielder, left fielder, first baseman in the future, Christian Campbell. The reasons are many. Number one, we're going to start with the fact that he's been in a terrible slump. And he's batting, I think, 220 right now, something in that neighborhood. He's been really slumping. And we just can't afford the lack of...
Love Red Sox Digest? And stop freeloading and subscribe already. Free subscribers get recaps, rants, and the occasional emotional breakdown, just like Craig Breslow with the trade deadline. Upgrade to a paid subscription and unlock the full archive. Subscriber-only game breakdowns, behind-the-scenes audio rants, exclusive mailbag Q&As, plus live chat and post-game streams where we scream into the void together. And if you're a true sicko, become a founding member and we'll put you on the podcast. That's right, a guest appearance on Red Sox Digest. Hit subscribe. It's cheaper than Fenway beer and way more satisfying.
Offense with Rafael Devers gone, with Bregman out of the lineup, and two other rookies that are trying to make names for themselves. I think the Red Sox made a big goofball move by signing Campbell to a $60 million contract before he even had 10 games under his belt. This all goes back to the fact that the Boston Red Sox think they're the smartest person in the room and they have all the answers. And the reality is they haven't had the answers since Dave Dombrowski's been here, in my opinion. And they've had a lack of direction, which I say just about every time I bring up the Boston Red Sox. And this lack of direction focuses around trying to be able to buy low on these guys coming up or into the organization so that they don't have the $200-400 million contracts that you're seeing all across baseball. And they are hoping too hard on him. And unfortunately, he's not ready, Nick. He's just not ready. Wow. This is a bad look on the organization. I don't care what anybody says. This is bad look on the team, a bad look on the organization. What are your thoughts?
Biggest takeaway here for me is getting Christian Campbell fixed. This is what I'm really concerned with because I don't trust the fundamentals and philosophy of the Red Sox to send him down to Worcester to fix those things, the hitting, the fielding, basically baseball 101. I don't trust that because you don't have any teachers in your organization bringing these young kids up to succeed. That's the biggest thing for me, and I can't stress that point I just hit right there enough. You have severely failed your minor league guys coming up to the system to getting up to the big club. Because right now, results-wise, you're not seeing these guys ready to play. Even Roman Anthony, his first game up, the play that was in right field, he just let it go right through him. You have these swings. They are not ready for off-speed. They are not ready for high fastballs. They're not ready for prime time. They're not. I wanted him to go down. Yeah, I wanted him to go down. That was the biggest thing. It wasn't helping Campbell being up here on the big club right now. It wasn't. So, yes, the move did need to happen. But in typical Red Sox fashion, just like you said, they threw out the red carpet as soon as opening day hit to sign the extension because they thought they were, like you said, the smartest people that got the best deal possible, that are going to lock up their future, because this kid, they felt, has successfully completed the launch angle program. That's what they've said. That's what they said. Clear as day. Christian Campbell is our guy who successfully has done everything right with the launch angle program. And look what it has done. It has now become an organizational failure on what you're seeing here right now, not just by Campbell, but by, I would say, probably at least 90% of your guys in your lineup are failing from this stupid launch angle.
Yeah, I hate launch angle. Totally hate it. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. Everybody's swinging for the fences. Here's the thing on Campbell. I am really worried they're going to Blake Swihart Christian Campbell. Yep. And if that happens, the Red Sox are going to have more egg on their face than they already did, because I'm not going to remind you, but I'll remind the listeners, we've been shoved these three prospects, including Teal, down our throats in total capacity for the last 4 years. And if you want to add Tristan Casas to that, he's been Paul Revere since 2018. Tristan Casas is coming. We don't have to do anything at first base. Don't sign him. Don't get Freddie Freeman, who I wanted badly.
Same here.
Don't do that because Tristan Casas is coming. So if you want to add him, and I know people are going to argue and say, he had a great 2020 thing in the second half. You know what? Listen, he is not a impact bat, and he's a very oft-injured guy. I don't think it's going to work with Tristan Casas, and the Red Sox told you that because they tried to shop him in the offseason. So
he's a whack job.
he is a whack job. Okay,
and sorry, he just is.
Yeah, if we offend anybody, that's what we're here to do.
Oh well,
but it is reality. So you want to add him to that list? You're talking quite a few number of guys here that are really busts. And I'll tell you right now, if Dave Dombrowski was still the general manager of this team, I don't think half of these guys, if any of them, would still be here. And I'd love to know what our team would have been. And I would have loved to know if we've had another World Series championships since 2018. I will digress a little bit. Here's my issue. So Campbell goes down. If Bregman is back after the All-Star break, I think you've got to have him at third base. You've got to have Meyer at short, and I would put Story at second base. Now, that may not be happy with – Story may not be happy with that, but I think under the duration of what happened with the Devers debacle, I think he should step up as the senior man in the room, believe it or not. I think he's one of the oldest players we have right now.
Yeah,
he should step up and say, this is what I'm going to do for the team because I understand the optics here. Whether that's going to happen, whether they ask him or not, is going to be another question. But that being said, I'm going to play heel right now. It appeared to me in spring training before Bregman was here that they wanted Campbell to be their second baseman. But they wanted Bregman very badly. There was a lot of talk about Bregman playing second. But they wanted Campbell there. Could you imagine, Nick, what this team could have been had they said, Campbell's not ready. We're not going to make this move. We're going to put Alex Bregman at second, and we'll have Devers at third. Would we still have Rafi Devers on this team right now?
Absolutely. Yep, 100%. There's no denying that. The whole thing got botched because the Red Sox lied and tiptoed around the news of the offseason with what they were going to do with Devers. They told him so many times that he's their third baseman. Don't worry about the media. It's all smoke, no fire. Spring training comes. Alex Bregman comes. We're all thinking Bregman's going to play second base. I was. I don't know about you, Jim. But that's when they signed him. I go, oh, that's great. They'll put Devers at, leave him at third. They're going to put Bregman to second. But there was no thought in my mind outside of if Devers agreed to maybe move over to first or DH or something like that, that they would even think about interrupting that whole thing that they with Devers. So, yeah, 100%. Devers is still here if Bregman started at second base for this season to begin with.
Jim Bowden was quoted, I think, on MLB. I was trying to listen to a little bit of that today on my drive in and out of the office on Sirius XM. And he had said that the Rafael Devers trade was egregious, was the term he used. Egregious. I don't know what to expect from this team moving forward. I don't know if they're just playing with house money and being lucky right now, but they better hope that they can get guys like Roman Anthony going because I saw a tweet, Nick. He was number 5 listed in rookies of the year.
You shared that with me.
Yeah, the guy's got 2 major league hits.
That's it.
If he gets going and can really rake, I mean, chances are you may not even miss Devers, but that's a big, huge stretch.
You're going to have to go through a stretch very similar to Roman Anthony, probably where it was Dustin Pedroia-esque when Pedroia came up in 06, where everybody thought, who the hell is this short little dude? Who the hell is he? He's going to be a major league player? No way. Get him out of here. And then shocked the world in 2007 with doing everything from there, and it was history from there. So, yeah, I do think it's going to be a while here, especially with the launch angle approach still in action here. I'm sorry to keep, you know, burning down that bridge here with the freaking launch angle, but I'm sorry. I am from the approach where nothing is changing from this offense until Pete Fatsy and his lousy launch angle crew are out of here. You have to have an organizational change of hitting philosophy with this team. Otherwise, what you see is what you're going to get.
Yeah. And we don't have the power hitters, in my mind, to be able to worry about launch angle.
No,
I mean, I look at this offense and I say, Jerem Duran should be better off as a slap hitter and use his legs. Marcelo Meyer looks like a guy who should be more of a slap hitter, gap hitter, 30 doubles a year, 35 doubles a year, 15, 20 home runs, something like that. Abraham Toro moving forward, again, doubles, singles. They, you know, Roman Anthony may be their biggest ticket in terms of home runs, but even Abreu, I don't want to see these guys trying to hit the ball, you know, to, you know, New Hampshire and strike out. The amount of strikeouts that this team is averaging on any given night, I mean, when you have a statistic of how their record is when they have 10 or more strikeouts or 10 or less strikeouts, if you have to have a statistic on that, it's not a good statistic to have.
No, it's not. That's not. I mean, I'm from that old school approach where you put the ball in play. Make the players in the field make a play. Whether it's a Yoshida ground out to second or whatnot, contact is so needed. You can't do anything by striking out. Nothing. No. Zero. No. There is zero production from that. So why they think, case in point, it's the Seattle game. Marcelo Meyer hit a home run. Story hit the home run. That's how our runs were scored. Everything else was a crapshoot. It's just how it is.
I mean, how many sacrifice flies did they have this year? Probably less than five.
It's unbelievable. Not that many.
No, it's not that many.
They're a terrible team hitting with runners in scoring position if they get runners in scoring position. Nevertheless, this is who they are. You can't change things when you don't make drastic moves. I've been screaming off the cliff. Pete Fatsy, I don't know why you're still here. You've been here since 2019 as an assistant hitting coach, and it's 6 years now. He's still here. That's a problem.
Yeah.
And they're not doing anything with it. They're not doing anything. Oh, it's fine. We're just going to hit home runs. And, oh, look how far that ball went up tonight. Look, did you see how far that went? That's what they care about. It's sick.
Yeah. It's not like it used to be like in the 80s. I'll tell you that much. I want to switch gears just before we close for tonight. The San Francisco series, the Boston Red Sox will be out in Oracle Park starting tomorrow night, 10:15 start local time. And then we have 2 4 o'clock games on Saturday and Sunday. So I'll be able to at least watch one of them. But we got Hunter Dobbins is going to be on Friday night against Hayden Birdsong, who's basically been a relief pitcher, although he's really young. We have Brian Bayo on Saturday. And he's going to be against Landon Roop, who has 4-5 with a 3.99 ERA. And then the last game on Sunday will be Lucas Giolito against a resurgent Robbie Ray. What are your thoughts and predictions for this three-game matchup?
I see the Giants taking 2 of 3. That's what I do. I think the Red Sox will get the Bayo win. I think Bayo will get that job done. I think tomorrow night's going to come down to a closer pitching kind of duel. I could see Hunter Dobbins giving up 3 runs or less. I don't think he's going to get tattooed by any means. I do think that it's going to come down to the offense again, not getting the job done tomorrow night in truth. And us watching Devers go 2-for-4 with some sort of big hit in a momentous game-changing play, and we're all going to shake our heads and say, oh, well, we could have had that. That'll be tomorrow night. I'm just going to predict that right now. Saturday, I think they'll bounce back. I've been pleasantly surprised with how Bayo's been throwing. I want to keep building on that and see what happens from there. And, you know, Lucas Giolito is one of those guys that's the Jekyll and Hyde. It's what are you going to get? We got a great outing this last this Monday night game against the Mariners, which was fantastic. But I could see a regress here. I could see the Giants, like I said, taking 2 or 3. So the Red Sox would lose tomorrow night, win Saturday night, lose Sunday. And then they go off to the Angels on Monday, right?
Yeah, they do. Okay. My prediction is they're going to lose the Sunday game against Robbie Ray. I mean, he's looked probably just as good as he did as when he was with the Blue Jays in that season that he had with them. You know, he went out to Seattle and just wasn't the same guy. So I'm, you know, and I don't have a lot of faith in Lucas Giolito repeating a good performance back to back. So I'm going to call that loss there. As far as tomorrow and Saturday, they could be toss-ups for a couple of reasons. I think if Dobbins can continue to throw the ball well, I know Birdsong had a really good outing in his last, I think it was 6 innings, 3 earned runs. So it's a quality start, 450. It's good enough. If Dobbins can match that or better, I think they have a chance to win tomorrow. I'm a little bit concerned about the Bayo. You know, he's a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde too. So I don't know. I'm leaning Red Sox win 2 of these 3, and I can't believe I'm saying that. But I could also see that if they lose game 1, they will lose 2 out of 3 for sure.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of where we're at. It's such a question mark on where you're gonna on what you're gonna get from each game outside of really a crochet start.
Yep.
I feel like if you have a crochet start, 9 times out of 10, if you can keep it 3 runs or less, you're gonna be okay. But the rest of these guys are such a wild card. They just are. You know, Dobbins has been a pleasant surprise, no doubt about it. But then I look at that as the season goes on, the scouting reports, to see the matches and the mix-ups on what they're going to do. That's where I'm saying to myself, it could be a loss. But I do think no matter what, we can guarantee it, we can mark it right now, said right here, that Devers will do something monumental this weekend to crush the hearts of all of us back here in Boston. Mark my words. And what could really spark a lot of outrage from fans could be tomorrow night, could be Saturday or Sunday. It's just a matter of if he's ready for it. And if the Giants put him out there, it's him being at first base. Oh, that is going to not sit well with some of us.
Well, you know, it's very scripted, right? I mean, most of these Red Sox games, you can almost like – see the writing on the wall. You kind of know that there's going to be a game-winning home run by Devers, probably in the 9th inning, and there's probably going to be one game that he's at first base and he's going to make some incredible play, gunning a runner down at home, or making a catch that you could not believe he did, starting a triple play. Some stupid thing is going to happen, so we're going to look and we're just going to shake our heads like, what in the hell did we just watch?
It's very scripted this season, 100%.
Well, that's going to do it for tonight. I want to thank Nick for joining me tonight. My name is Jim Delfino. We are Red Sox Digest. You can see our in-print digital on RedSoxDigest.com. Please subscribe. It is free. And we post articles just about every day, especially during the season, on the rants and the sarcasm of how that game went. Nick, have a good night. Everybody else, have a good night. And let's see how this series goes in San Francisco.
We'll see you all soon.
Bye-bye.